Is that coming through loud and clear, or is it coming through at all? Can you hear it? Sorry? Yes, it sounds to be coming through. Okay, we have got something of a PowerPoint as well. What we're going to be talking about tonight is the celebrity culture. Celebrity culture. Gillian, could you put the first slide up for me, please? Who's that? Oh, well done. You even got the full married name. Jessica Ennis Hill. Okay. What about the next one? Paris Hilton. Yes, anybody heard of Paris Hilton? Yeah, one or two. Next one, please. Who are those? Kardashians or Kardashians or whatever. Okay. I don't think we've got another one. That's a little bit later. A celebrity culture. A celebrity culture is where we are at the moment. It's where the rich and the famous are influential. Our opinions are affected not by people who know, but by people who are known. Okay? Somebody once said, don't give me any more of experts. I've had enough of experts. I'll just make my own mind up for myself. I'll follow my dreams. The celebrity culture can be affected by people who are rich. They might have achieved their wealth through their own efforts. Sometimes they've inherited it. And often you find that if they've inherited it, then there's an awful lot of ridicule attached to that, because, oh well, it's just because their daddy or their mummy's really rich that they've got what they've got. Sometimes it's down to plain, ordinary luck, like the lottery, for example. Sometimes they're famous because of sports achievements, such as Ennis Hill. Obviously, in the 2012 Olympics, do you know, when you went down to London, her face was plastered absolutely everywhere. She was the darling of the Olympics. At one point, she said that she was just outside the camp, and she was going to go and get some fish and chips, right? An athlete eating fish and chips, oh, that's terrible. But she said that as she got there, just above the fish and chip shop, there was a great big poster of her. She turned the car around and went back to the Olympic Village. She said, I can't do this. But there are people who seem to aspire and want to enjoy the celebrity status. There are also those who have it and want to avoid it. But why are we fascinated by them? What is it that attracts us to it? How many people have been in the supermarket queue, seen the magazines that were going round and others like it at the start, okay and hello, and you sort of cast a little glance across to see who's on the front cover? Have you ever done it? Yeah? There's no, you know, problem with admitting that. You sort of, I wonder what they're on about, or I wonder what's happening now, or oh look. Well, the thing is that we see them as successful and we want to be successful. We see them as having achieved something, and really, if we admit it, we'd like to achieve that too. We want to wear what they wear. We want to do what they do. We want to be like them. Because if we're like them, surely that makes us successful too. It makes us interesting. We're told a story once of this guy who went into Asda, and he didn't have an awful lot of money, but he needed some trainers, so he went and got himself some trainers. Sort of Asda price trainers. And he went to the checkout, and the woman on the till says, you're not buying those, are you? He says, yeah. Why? He says, and she said to him, do you know my son wouldn't be seen dead in trainers like that? Do you know, I work here on this till so that he can afford proper trainers. And that's what she was doing. to fund the lifestyle and the accessories that he demanded, she was working to make sure he could have them. You got to have the right kind of sunglasses. You got to have the right phone, the right computer. You got to drive the right car. You got to have the right equipment. Have you seen these dream kitchens? Fantastic. There's no house with kitchens like that, I'm sure. Although I must laugh, because one time we went in to one of these places and it was a very odd, different kind of kitchen. They got ordinary level sort of work surfaces. Then they got one that was actually that high. And I can say this because she's in the other room. And Julie went up to it and she couldn't actually reach on top of it to get the stuff off. But anyway. Do you know, the ad people call this sort of thing aspirational desires. Aspirational desires. What that means is costly desires. The statement goes that consumers need to consider how appealing the brand is. They need to consider how appealing the brand is. Have you got the right brand? Do you know, when you used to buy a t-shirt, the name label was on the back, tucked in. Where is it now? Where's the name label? It's across the front. You're walking around and saying, I'm being your advert. Yeah? Exactly. And that's what you're doing. And why are you doing that? Because other people do it. And the people who are famous and rich, they do it. So you've got to wear what they wear. It costs to follow the brand. I'm not getting at Apple in any way, shape or form when I say this. It's just that, being who I am, this is one of the few brands I actually know about. When the iPhone 5S came out, obviously it came out first in America, to actually make it cost $198.70. Do you know how much it sold for? $450. That's profit. That's profit. Do you know, we are now more focused on fame than ever before. It's estimated that 51% of 18 to 25 year olds think that they will be famous sometime. Over half of them don't want to be famous, they think they will be famous. A poll run by the Independent newspaper found out that 54% of 16 year olds, do you know what they want to be? No, they want to be famous. Don't want to work in an office. Don't want to work anywhere. They want to be, maybe I'm showing my age here, kids used to want to be train drivers, didn't they? Yeah? Well, they want to be famous. There's no idea of how, why, what or where, but that's what they want to be when they grow up. They want to be famous. And as it said in the article, we're setting a whole generation up for a lifetime of feeling a failure. Because how many of those people will be famous? Andy Warhol once said that everybody can have, well, 15 minutes actually, he said, yeah, 15 minutes of fame. Have you had yours yet? Oh, you've had, well done, Alan. Out of this congregation, we've got one person. Do you understand what it does? You're setting them up for failure. And failure breeds resentment. Even once we grow old and we get jaded and reality sets in, 40% of us still want to be famous. Still hankering after fame. Due to the rise in social media, some of us can be. One of the things behind the idea of social media is letting people know what you think and what you're like, what you're doing. Because after all, people are interested, aren't they? How many followers have you got? You know, on your Twitter feed or on Facebook. It's trying to be famous. Some people will do anything to be famous. Even mass killings. Numerous people have shot a whole gang of others, and one of the reasons behind it is to be famous. Assassinations have been attempted. One guy tried to assassinate a vice president, and when he was arrested afterwards, it was a totally botched attempt. He said, "You spoilt it. I was hoping I'd get a whole chapter in the book written about me." Why? Because he wanted to be famous. Celebrity status comes in all shapes and sizes. All you need to do is come up with a new angle, a new idea to corner the market. And one guy's tried it. A guy called Leonid Feinberg, nicknamed Tarzan. Because I can't pronounce his name very well, that's how I'll refer to him from now on in. Was a Ukrainian mobster. He was born in Odessa. He left the Soviet Union early in the 1980s and went to Israel. Then he moved to the United States following the fall of the Soviet Union. Listen to this. In the mid-1990s, he attempted to buy a used Soviet submarine. Like you do. Yeah. Do you know why he wanted to buy a disused Soviet submarine? To smuggle cocaine from Colombia into the United States. He thought, easy, the boats are looking out for other boats, I'll go under the boats. But that's not the thing that really made him famous. What he's famous for is as a sex trafficker. And he achieved fame for this. And what he said was this: you can buy a woman for $10,000 and make your money back in a week. If she is pretty and young, then everything after that is profit. That's how you achieve fame. The Hedgehog Review says this: what is significant today is the increasingly varied roles that celebrities play in contemporary culture. The roles that they are granted. We see celebrities serving as heroes, cultural commentators, charity spokespersons, role models, political candidates, to name just a few. We look to celebrities for their comments on anything that matters to us, as if they have some insight we lack. They serve for many as the arbiters of taste, morality, and public opinion. An exploitation of celebrity culture uncovers changing conceptions of legitimacy, authority, and credibility in our culture. What's noteworthy today is how many aspects of our lives and our culture have taken on the form of entertainment. Presidential debates. People are not looking so much as what the candidates are saying, but how well they come across. Students expect their lecturers to be entertaining. We see in schools that the lessons have got to be entertaining. We even have televised marriages. And after all, it's entertaining. What's the reason? Why are we so hooked on celebrity culture? And why are we so fascinated by it all? One of the reasons is that we're told that everything, life, the whole universe, just happened by chance. We are an accidental product. Therefore, there is no meaning to life whatsoever. What you see is what you get. This world is material and there's nothing else. And the idea comes across from school age upwards, and it is an horrendous idea, that we are nothing and are of no value. Teaching young people that they have no value is surely one of the worst things that could ever happen. But it's not new. A guy called Thomas Hobbes, who lived from 1588 to 1679, said this: "The value of or worth of man is as other things, his price. And as in other things, so in men. Not the seller, but the buyer determines the price." Have you heard the statement? Everything's got a price, everything has a value. It all depends on how much you want to pay. He went on to say, "Let a man rate himself as the highest value that they can, yet their true value is no more than what others are willing to pay." So even put a price on people. As we saw earlier, Tarzan put the value on a young woman as $10,000. Does that seem a lot? Or does it seem such a small amount? The idea is that we are simply physical. There is no spiritual, and we are simply machines. Do you know, somebody, sadly, has worked out that if you were sold for your chemical value, the chemicals that actually make you up, you could have a value of between, have a guess, how much? How much do you think you're worth, chemically speaking? 40 grand. 40 grand. Any advance on 40 grand? Sorry? It's actually between $3.99 and $7.99. So if you're thin and skinny, you're cheap. If you've got some weight, you're worth more. Exactly. This is not an excuse for obesity. But can you see that somebody's actually value people chemically? £3.99 to just under £8. We laugh, but is that horrendous? A guy called Marlon King. You might have heard of him. In 2009, Marlon King, who played for Wigan Athletic, he was a striker at the time, was said to have become angry when he was in the nightclub. He went to a woman and she rejected his advances, as it says, and he said to her, "Don't you know who I am? I'm a millionaire. You're not even in my league." And then do you know what he did? He smacked her in the face because she was worthless. Katie Price said this: "No one can live without money. Money and religion are the big things, and that's it. I stay away from religion. We love to earn money. Who doesn't? It gets you things and it's security." A guy called Michael Carroll. He was nicknamed the Lotto Lout after winning 9.7 million on the national lottery in 2002, and he enjoyed celebrity status. He was called the King of Chavs, and he called himself Chavy McChavchav. Okay. This is what he said. Listen to this very carefully. "I want my kid to follow its dreams. If he wants to be a bank robber, that's cool with me." What? What value is that? Would you put the last slide on for us, please? Thanks, Gillian. Okay, it's a play on words. Life's a pitch. You might have heard a slight variation on that. How to sell yourself and your brilliant ideas. A book written by Stephen Baylor and Roger Mabity. This is what they argue. That if you're living a godless and a soulless universe, which they say that we are, then the only intelligent response is to sell yourself. Go and make a pitch. And so many people are actually adopting this and trying to live it as a lifestyle. Because pointless, ordinary life is boring. Let's be famous at any cost. So what's the answer? Genesis 1:26, this is what God said. Let us make mankind in our image. Each and every person who comes into this world is made in the image and likeness of God. And that gives incredible value. Simply by being here, we have value. But more than that, in John 3:16 it says, For God so loved the world that He gave His only Son for us. What value is the life of the Son of God? Inestimable. And yet He gave Himself for us. In Galatians 2:19-20 it says this, For through the law I died to the law so that I might live for God. I have been crucified with Christ and I no longer live, but Christ lives in me. The life I now live in the body, I live by faith in the Son of God who loved me and gave Himself for me. 1 Timothy 2:5-6 says this, For there is one God and one mediator between God and mankind, the man Christ Jesus, who gave Himself as a ransom for many. The idea there, the Greek word there, is the price that is given in exchange for another. The act of buying back. We said before that guy, Thomas Morton, was saying that you have no value other than what someone is willing to pay. In the 1980s, Graham Kendrick wrote a song called Paid on the Nail. I'm going to read you the words. Is a rich man worth more than a poor man? Is a stranger worth less than a friend? Is a baby worth more than an old man? Is your beginning worth more than your end? Is a president worth more than his assassin? Does your value decrease with your prime? Like when Christ took the place of Barabbas, would you say he was wasting his time? Well, how much do you think you are worth? Would anyone stand up and say? Would you say that a man is worth nothing until someone is willing to pay? Suppose that you think that you matter. Well, how much do you matter to who? It's much easier at night when with friends and bright lights than much later, alone in your room. Do you really think they'll miss one in a million when you finish this old human race? Does it really make much of a difference when your friends have forgotten your face? If you heard that your life had been valued, that a price had been paid on the nail, would you ask what was traded, how much, and who paid it? Who was he? What was his name? If you heard that his name was called Jesus, would you say that the price was too dear, held to the cross, not by nails, but by love? It was you broke his heart, not the spear. Would you say you were worth what it cost him? Would you say no? Well, the price stays the same. If it doesn't make you cry, you laugh it off, pass it by. Just remember the day when you threw it away, that he paid what he thought you were worth. The celebrity culture is actually a fantastic opportunity to share the gospel. The people who are chasing celebrity status, who are looking to be like somebody famous, we can ask them, well, what do you think you're worth? How famous do you think you have to be before you're worth something? You could tell the story of the sex trafficker who valued young girls at $10,000. You could say, well, actually, somebody's actually valued you, chemically speaking, between 4 and 8 quid. You could also tell this story. Dr. Eric Pianka, a top scientist who gave a speech at the Texas Academy of Science, in which he advocated the need to exterminate 90% of the population of the world. And he thought a pretty good way to do it would be through the Ebola virus. All you got to do is drop it on sort of concentrated areas and you get rid of a good number of people. He said that we are no better than bacteria. So you could tell the story. Dr. Pianka says that we're, you know, no better than bacteria. Would you agree with that? Do you think he's right? Or do you think you've got more value? But who's going to value? Do you know the Bible says that you are incredibly valuable to God? As I say, what a fantastic opportunity to share the gospel. What do others think you're worth? What do you think you're worth? But most importantly of all, what does God think you're worth?